outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, I'm sitting here in an RV park called Horseshoe Ridge, just outside of Austin, Texas, brand new, sitting in my motorhome with Sarah here. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
As we said a couple weeks ago, Kyle's on a bit of a break, so this might be a good time to catch up with Sarah a little bit. People love your story to death, so it's maybe fun to catch up with you again, and Sarah's willing to do it, so how are you doing?
Okay.
We're a week out on our trip. How's it going?
Going good. We have had more rain than we have had in previous trips.
Oh, you forget some of the places we've had rain.
True. We did lose our windshield wiper once.
We had a bit of rain on the drive out of California and getting into Arizona. Yeah. And then we got some rain this morning, but we haven't had much here in Austin. We did have the clouds, however, ruin what the eclipse could have been for us, yeah?
Yeah, but we saw through the clouds the eclipse as it was creeping across the sun. And then once the total eclipse happened, then we saw the effects of it, but we couldn't see the actual.
Yeah, it was sad too, because it was right at full. It was just, there were just those little, that last little sliver of the little beads, whatever they call it, and then it was gone. And darkness just came really rapidly, like someone turned on a dimmer switch. We sat in the dark for a couple of minutes, and then it began to lighten, and we didn't see it again, but we did right at the end. This was an interesting eclipse. I saw a full eclipse with my son 7 years ago in Wyoming, I think. I think it was 2017. And how this eclipse was different, right at the end, there was like a red light on the bottom of the sun.
Yep.
Or moon, actually. And
on the moon?
It looked like a red light on the bottom of the moon.
Oh, yeah.
But it was actually a plasma protuberance or something, prominence, from the sun behind. And it managed to get through all that. So that was pretty spectacular.
We saw that. I mean, I had a friend in Dallas, and it was cloudy on the front end, and then when it got to totality, then it cleared up for them. They could see it through the clouds, so we were kind of the opposite.
It was really worth viewing, even though it wasn't the full effect I was hoping you'd get the chance to see. But we made the best use of it.
Yep.
And we've had a good time with people we've hung out with already in Austin and grabbing some barbecue, so it's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
One weekend, about 10, 11 to go.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about that.
Yeah, we're thinking about making a swing from here. If you're kind of out in our direction somewhere, from here we're going to go to Bryant College Station for a little bit, and then we're headed across the Gulf Coast out to Mississippi near Pensacola, that area, and then up to Anniston. And then from there, we're not really sure. We're thinking we'll get down to Jekyll Island, down Charleston, Savannah way, and maybe come back up through Columbia, through Lake Wylie, which is the Charlotte area. And then from there, we've got a couple of choices as to which way we go. So we're not sure. Eventually, we're going to get out to Virginia. The plan is, unless something happens and we need to turn home. Kind of mid-May, we'll be in the Richmond area and then Baltimore. And then first weekend of June, we're going to be in the Lexington, Louisville area. And then we're going to take our trek home from there.
Yeah. So
if you're along the way, I mean, some of what controls where we go is where people want to hang out with us. And we can't get to everybody who's written us because the routing doesn't take us quite that direction, but we'll get where we can. Part of doing this that I think's fun, Sarah and I, is we get involved in conversations that just don't happen at home. I mean, when do you sit and talk for 3 hours?
Not often.
It doesn't happen rarely because somebody's got to go somewhere or go do something, yeah. But 3 hours we're captive in the motorhome because we're driving from point A to point B. And we got some stuff we like to listen to and whatever. But boy, we got in a discussion the other day because of something that your counselor said that I thought was, one, an incredible compliment for you. But secondly, I think it's something that's so critical for people who want to go on this journey. Because we talk about God's love, and God's love is amazing and how tender and caring He is for us. And then the other side of that is the truth that we need to know. What did your counselor say to you, Sarah, about your passion for that?
I don't know how specifically it was, it came up, but a while ago she asked how I want to know the truth and I keep going and seeking after the truth.
And the truth isn't, I know we think, we hear Jesus' words, you know the truth and the truth will set you free. And we mostly, as I've grown up with that verse and hear it from a lot of people who teach it or talk from it, it's like knowing the truth of the gospel, the truth of scripture, the truth about God. You're really talking about something different. You're talking about the truth about you.
Yeah, truth about
your history.
About my history, the truth about what happened, the truth about now seeing it looking backwards, the truth about me understanding myself at a deeper level. And she just said, it's not common for people to be persistent or consistent in seeking truth. Over the last months, I mean, there was a time where I thought maybe some of my memories had, I had processed enough of them. But there's been the last, 6, 7 months or so, I've had new memories come and not steady, but enough to where they have been traumatic. One of them was very traumatic because it was including another person in my, she calls it arena of life or my
cast of characters.
Kind of, because it's arena, it's my life, and it's the things that happen in that. And that really shook me to the core. And somehow or other, in that, it took my whole understanding of myself or seeking out, not running away from the new revelation of this one person who I love so dearly. And that took me to a deeper level of shock, but then also in that shock, thinking what's happening, and to a deeper level of understanding. And I've seen over the last couple of years, because that revelation that I had, that memory, I could not have handled it early on. I could not have handled that person being involved in that whole arena, that whole circle.
And what happened to you? Yeah. And if you're new to the podcast and you haven't heard the Redeeming Love set of podcasts that Sarah and I did a couple of years ago now, we're coming up actually, day after tomorrow is the 2-year anniversary of my coming home and Sarah being gone. Sarah having left me and going to divorce me and just in so much pain. Then she didn't know the cause of it at all, but she was in so much pain that she had actually contemplated suicide and then wanted to live. And so she figured the only way she could do that was to move out. Her counselor at the time had pegged me as an abusive husband. That's why she was having PTSD. That's a short story of it. You can go back and hear the whole thing if you want to. But it was shortly after that, Sarah switched counselors, and this new lady, who's with Sarah now, really helped her within a matter of weeks find out that, no, I wasn't the problem. I hadn't caused her PTSD, her PTSD predated our relationship, and went back to her childhood, and she found out between 4 and 8 or 9, she was sexually molested by her grandfather and by some cousins and other people in her life. So that was all new to Sarah. Can you imagine 64 years of being totally having amnesia about that, that you had no clue that that was a part of your past. And for the last 2 years, I've watched you deal with that, deal with the unfolding memories and things that often happen when we're going to bed at night or in the middle of the night. Often those memories start to clarify over days and weeks. And Sarah's told that story in some detail, and you can go back and listen to it if you want to. And actually over the last year, we haven't had a lot of that stuff. You've been dealing with coping mechanisms, those kinds of things. And I know a lot of people, almost everybody I talk to goes, how's Sarah doing? You have a lot of fans out there really rooting for you and rooting for the wholeness of God to come in your life. What has amazed me, because I watch people go on spiritual journeys, and I think a lot of our spiritual journeys is coming to an awareness of the truth about us and things that have happened to us or failures or things in our own life and coming to grips with those things. And I think that's where Jesus' words are most important. You'll know the truth. When you know the truth about what happened to you, in your case particularly, it has just opened up greater freedom. Now, knowing the truth is incredibly painful, right?
It's very painful, and facing it and dealing with it, because if I don't, it's inside me anyhow. I mean, I can see in my medical history, especially in childhood and through the years, I see the trauma, I see my PTSD, I see the effects that it has had on me emotionally, physically, mentally, and how I live. I mean, it affects everything that I do or want. I mean, and I remember early on, by facing the truth and knowing the truth, it was very painful, but in that, from the very first one, each memory, it was less aggressive, and then the memories got more and more aggressive.
And the memories got darker. The first ones are bad enough. The first one you had was horrible. But then the people involved and circumstances that happened, without going into detail, each of those, as things unfolded, got darker.
Yeah, and my subconscious, I think it's dual, where I was becoming safer within myself to be able to trust that I have the environment around me to be able to process these without judgment or condemnation and in safety, gentleness, and kindness.
Yeah, that's what Sarah and I got talking about, because I admire Sarah's courage tremendously. I've dealt with a lot of people, and I think what your counselor said, that it's most people, it is uncommon to have people have this desire to keep drilling down and find out what's true about you. I even asked you at one point, do you wish your amnesia would have lasted to the end of your life so you wouldn't have had to know here? And you said no. Because like you said, the pain was in your body and your mental stuff. I mean, there was things going on that was very dark in your heart.
The triggers were increasing every day throughout the day. And they were becoming with little things, like how somebody was walking, the tone of voice, we joked about it, but how you put a cup on the counter, or how you would stand, or... I mean, the triggers were unrelenting, and it was not letting up. It was increasing, and that's like that volcano that I have talked about where I couldn't keep it down. And so those were increasing. And when those are happening, it's just like in my mind, it's just like a battlefield of bombs are just going off, and you just want them to stop. And they're not stopping. And so... I feel that those would have kept increasing if I haven't been wanting to face them, because it was costing me also just mentally, emotionally, but also physically. It's taken a toll.
But still difficult to face. I mean, even though people that we've talked to, who are they kind of like, you know, I have symptoms similar to Sarah's, but man, I don't want to know what happened back there. Or even people who... love you, love us, but don't want to know your story. Just don't. It's kind of a
unknown
ostrich head in the sand. Kind of. If I don't see it, our dogs do that sometimes. If they get near something they really don't want to deal with, they kind of just look the other way and pretend that whatever's happening is not happening. And I think that's very common in our humanity. We like to gravitate toward things that are positive and good and optimistic and life-giving. And then when Jesus pokes holes in our illusions, when we find out the truth we hold in our heart isn't really true, or our past is different than we thought, it takes a long time for people, and usually pain. It's usually the pain is so great that I can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the pain becomes so overwhelming. I just wanted it to stop. But I didn't understand because I took it internally towards myself because every trigger ended up proving that I'm this horrible person that I felt I was. So then that just takes you into a deeper pit. I mean, it just gets darker and darker, and it's the unknown of that that is terrifying, because when you know it, at least you know. Somebody told me once, I think it was with medical issues, knowledge gives you power, because at least you have the ability to know what you're facing, to be able to make decisions and to go forward.
And we talked about it in the car the other day, because I said, why do you think you have that? Why do you think when we know so many others who find out, I mean, to find out there was pain in your past, to find out you were not horrible, but something horrible happened to you is a major shift.
Yeah.
But that would have been shift enough for some people. Like, I don't want to, okay, I'm just content with that. You've continued, like a memory will start, something will happen, and over days, you'll be, I don't know what happened there. And you'll want to talk about it and process it with me, with your counselor. And you just keep drilling down because you want to understand what's there. That's what's rare. Like, you have enough information just to cope with your life and not necessarily learn all the dark things that are there, but something in your brain, that inner child part of the brain that got frozen at 4 to 8, whatever, she really wants you to know what happened back there.
Part of it is, I think I'm curious, always have been curious.
You are curious.
I know I am strong, and through all this, I have seen that I have tremendous strength. It's looking backwards. I see and have experienced the hope and the peace, internal peace, that can come from processing, after processing through some memories.
From knowing the truth and then coming to grips with it, making it part of your story, finding Jesus's healing and wisdom around that has been very helpful. And then it just becomes part of your memory. And you have the greater freedom. And I love that about you. So I asked you, what do you feel like? Because now, like, if we're peeling an onion, we're getting down to the darker layers of that onion. And particularly the last couple of months have been particularly dark and stressful for your memory.
That last person that it got in the arena really shook me. And because it gripping with that fact helped me, or I became aware at a different level of the magnitude of my grandfather's influence and almost his power and dictatorship over the arena that I was in.
Everybody, not just you.
Yeah.
Everybody in that arena.
And
he was a force of tremendous darkness
that you do not cross,
that you could not resist,
and you just couldn't cross. And so I don't know why, because up until that time I was seeing the ways that I cope to survive in life. I mean, it's just little things on, you know, lights, curtains, places to live, no friends, dogs. I mean, there's just tons of things that you learn at an early age that you like or don't like. And mine, I saw and came to see, for me, in order to survive, it was all about being safe. So I was invisible and not seen.
Being invisible was being safe for you.
Yeah, because if I'm visible, then I am their prey. I am their victim. I can be abused. I can be abused all sorts of ways, and ridiculed and made fun of and controlled. So it's all about not being seen and being invisible. I mean, that comes from, I like sound. I like something going on in a room.
Well, music or...
Yeah. I knew that, but I didn't understand the depth of understanding why. And after this last person was included in that, my whys, which were connected to the different traumas I had, now it's like a deeper understanding of myself. The whys went deeper to where now I understand why I didn't want to do something, why those actions, and the understanding is at even a different level. I mean, the why I didn't want it quiet. I don't feel safe when it's quiet, because if it's too quiet, you can be heard. And if you can be heard, you can be seen. And if you can be seen, then they're going to find you and they're going to use you. And so it all is about, for me, having to be safe and try to protect myself at all costs.
And yet that is even changing. Because we had some time with some people here since we arrived in Austin. And you came away kind of disturbed from it in some way. And when I was talking to you about it, I asked you about it. And she said, and you finally, what you landed on was, I didn't feel seen.
Yeah.
And for someone who's lived your whole life not to be seen, for there to be a part of you to feel disturbed that you weren't. And there were reasons for that. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't anybody's fault. Nobody's being mean. Nobody, it was that. But, you know, I'm there and I'm a presence. People have read my book. And so people want to talk to me about a lot of things. And sometimes you feel like you get, but in times past, you've liked that. You've liked not being seen. And I love the fact that that's changing.
And it's not just visible, that it's, you're not important, which then leads to you're not worthy. All those are somewhat connected. And so it's just interesting to me. Maybe I'll understand it more, or maybe not ever. But now, after this last few memories, the whys and the understanding comes very quickly to me. Like, the music. Then I understand, almost instantly understand the why. I like to live in the bigger cities. You like to be in the country. But for me, I can hide easier.
That may yet change. Who knows? You may actually come to love the country.
I don't know.
We'll see.
It's easier to think about hiding in a bigger city.
I get that.
And so, I now can see all little things, you know, curtains, why I like lights, why I don't like the big in big rooms. I mean, I just like why I like dogs. And
if you consider yourself prey, it changes the way you orient yourself to the world. I've never thought of myself as prey. That's advantage of being a man, advantage of growing up in a family where that wasn't an issue. It makes my heart hurt how much you've lived your life to accommodate the fact that you feel like prey. Just intuitively inside without thinking about it.
Also part of that is women. Women have to think about how they have to have more protective mentality when you're maneuvering through life.
Well, I get that. I see that clearly for what women have to negotiate in terms of men and how men view them, objectify them oftentimes. Let's get back to some of our discussion that day in the thing, because I asked you, why do you think you have this passion to get to what's true? And you talked about, I think I have tools now, or you have foundations.
Yeah, foundations, because I was asking, because I was, a couple weeks ago, we were out at dinner, and there were about two or three things that happened that just kind of, I triggered me, and I processed the next day, figured out what was happening, but I was talking about this with someone in seeing that, am I going to keep having all these different things? And sometimes I feel like I am getting triggered more by little things, not necessarily all big things. And I just like it in some ways, sometimes I think I'm walking backwards because I'm being triggered so much. But yet now I'm realizing and figuring out that no, my eyes are open and I'm more aware of what is happening. I've had these triggers. I was always feeling those feelings with situations my whole life. I was never noticing them. And now I'm noticing them more. And where I'm able to now have what has happened over the last couple years, a foundation on which I can be able to now and have tools to be able to use to where I can recognize and then be able to have tools to be able to work towards processing through these things as they come up.
I love what you said about that, because the trigger is happening. It's impacting you emotionally, mentally, physically.
Yep.
Even when you don't see it.
Yep.
So now when you see it, I mean, I think it's a beautiful thing that somehow your perspective and what God has done in your life, that you're now able to recognize it when they're happening, which, like you said, may feel like I'm going backwards, but not really. It's really forwards to be able to go, oh, okay, this is what I'm feeling. This is what's happening to me. And we talk about that a lot on our walks. We talk about some of the things you're feeling and some of the things that got triggered. And it's lovely. In other words, it's going to impact you either way. And I think that's what most people don't understand. Like the dog, yeah. If I turn my attention away, it's not going to bother me. No, it is. Even the act of turning away from it is giving it place in your life in a very negative way, in a very hostile way. So what are some of those? And I think these are things that God, I think your counselor has been incredibly helpful in building these things into your life. And the reason I want people to see it, if you're afraid to face what's true about your life, maybe it's because you don't have the resources to handle what you might see. And so part of getting to, and I always said this, light is carried in the conduit of love. Until you know you're loved, you really can't embrace the truth. The truth is scary. That's the story of the shack. That's Mac coming to rest in God's love so that God now can bring his light to Mac's great sadness and to where he's gotten stuck on his journey. And so love precedes light. And I think love is one of those foundational things to be in an environment where you feel loved and feel safe. But what are some of the other ones that are helpful for you?
Well, initially, I think it's allowing yourself to, boy, this sounds odd, I think I'm going to be a schizophrenic type of person, that you connect with your inner child.
She's always weird saying that because
but,
we know.
It sounds like, yeah.
It sounds new. People freak out over the term. What it just means is there's a part of her brain that froze with those memories at a very young age. And so they're still there in that part of her brain, which in many ways acts like you parenting yourself from 48 years old. Which is beautiful, I think.
Because when I'm feeling those feelings, that's my inner child feeling them. I'm not feeling them with an adult rational brain.
Right.
And so it's for then my adult rational brain has to connect with that inner feeling to try to calm her down or say, we're safe, we're okay, or it's not happening.
It really helps to see that part of your brain as you as a child.
Yeah.
That now you get to parent. You get to say, hey, we're safer now. We're not prey. You talk to that inner child a lot. And I know people are going to think that's weird. I think it's beautiful. I think the idea, and I've got three or four other people that we've talked about the same thing, to be a parent to your inner child when there was no one there to parent you, to help you handle what was happening to you, there's a part of you internally that needs that, needs the soothing, rational presence, which is how you deal with trauma, is moving it from the irrational side of your brain to the rational side and the prefrontal cortex and all. And I think that's so beautiful.
Another one, instead of running, and this is where it's hard because the unknown can produce a lot of fear. Because you don't know, because you're not you can't control
uncertainty. Yeah.
And so part of it is sitting with the pain and not rushing through it. And when my counselor did many times, I will say, even just a few weeks ago, I said, I don't know. And then I was wanting to go on. She said, no, stop. Sit with that. Don't stop, you know, to allow yourself to keep continuing on in the pain. And I know it's scary because you don't know how deep it's going to go or what revelation is going to come out of that. And so it's just sitting there. And if you're grieving or if you're crying, not to try to control it and stop it.
That's so important. I think we we rush through pain. Just whether it's the pain of grief, whether it's the pain of trauma, it's like it's un-Christian to sit in our pain until God meets us there, and resolves it for us. And I know people who are rushed through grief. Oh my gosh, you're still grieving your child or your spouse dying 2 months ago. People, Christians especially, are absurd with the advice we give people to try and make us feel, and I think that's what it is. We're trying to make us feel better being with them. I don't like to know that you're hurting, but I don't mind sitting in your pain with you. I don't mind. We talk about it sometimes weeks in a row till whatever processing needs to happen. And I think that's beautiful. People who can't sit in their pain are going to miss a lot of healing because they're going to just rush it, bury it, and run on down the road and leave it there by itself.
And sometimes even in sitting in that, at many times, I especially early on, I was not able to identify what I was feeling. I don't know how to explain that any other way. I just couldn't grab hold of, partly because I wasn't ever allowing myself to feel. And then now trying to identify what I was feeling. And that took some time.
Yeah, naming it, you can deal with it. Try Softer talks about that. It gives you a chart of like 7 basic emotions from joy to sadness to despair to whatever. And then under each of those, another 14 different emotions. And we've used tools like that to go, what exactly are you feeling? Let's find where the feeling is. And then it's easier to kind of find the source of where the feeling is coming from. I think that's a beautiful process. Again, we tend to rush past the negative emotions and try and prop ourselves up with the joyful ones. Someone was talking to us the other day, start crying. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. And that's the normal reaction. We're not allowed. But Scripture says to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep, to stay in that place with them. And I know it makes so many people uncomfortable to be with someone who's hurting. But that's what someone who's hurting needs more than anything.
I know that you've had, and I've dealt with it, and I keep it in handy often, that big circle.
Color wheel, yeah.
Yeah.
Feelings.
That was very helpful for me to, at least I have words around on this circle, then I could just, help identify, especially early on, to know what I'm feeling. It's allowing yourself. And
I don't know if I have access to it on the road. If I do, we're going to add it to a resource on the blog underneath the resources of this podcast, if I can find it. If it's not there, it meant I didn't find it on the road. We'll try to remember at some point.
And another thing for me, because of how I love gardening and birds and dogs and stuff, it was sitting with God's creation, like sitting outside and just feeling the sun hit your face, or feeling and the wind, and just being at peace and just enjoying Father's garden. Journaling was another one. Mm-hmm. I find that sometimes journaling, I'm writing, and then all of a sudden I'm writing down something that my brain's not dictating. It's just coming out.
Which is beautiful. It's a real discovery. So you're writing about something you're feeling and knowing.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, I do that not so much in writing. I journal things that happened to me earlier in the day. But I do that just in conversation with God. I find myself, or even fellowshipping with, I find myself saying something to somebody else I've never thought of before. But it's revelatory. It's wow, that really helped me. And I've never had the thought before it came out of my mouth.
For me, a big one was having compassion for myself.
Well, it's huge.
Which I don't always do.
You were the perfect Christian in that you cared for everybody around you better than you cared for yourself. Perfect in the way I was raised. And yet it was a horrible reality that you had no self-compassion. That's not a godly way to live. But that's Jesus, others, yourself. So it looks like it, like you should, but self-compassion is so important.
I'm learning this one, and I've done it off and on, is meditation. And it's just quiet. Learn to quiet your mind.
Yeah, we think of meditation often. I mean, the Bible talks a lot about meditation, but it's like meditate on scriptures or meditate on the sermon. this is just kind of where you're clearing all the thoughts that are rampaging your head. And then sometimes that's where God's thoughts come through, right?
Yeah.
Or you get in touch with a better Sarah, but you're not trying to. You just do.
Deep breathing. I don't always do that well either. Deep breathing, because when you're anxious, your breath is shallow. And when I have PTSD or I get panic attacks, I have to, yeah, that the deep breathing is huge. But it comes also in a calmness, which also goes back to meditation, which also goes back to sitting with God's creation. All these are intertwined so much in the, how they help. Another one that is gratitude.
That's interesting.
If you find that you can be things that you are grateful for. Early on, one of my early on
assignments.
Oh yeah, was write 100 good things about my mom. Was 1 week. And then a few weeks later, then it was 100 about my dad. And not too long ago, it was 100 about myself. And then I was supposed to read the, now I wasn't always the best at this, read those lists every day for to be able to go through that. And it's becoming grateful for things that you're grateful. Another one that was EMDR. That was something that was helpful to me when I process when some things are lodged in me really deep.
And EMDR is a great tool. I know people get threatened because it's not like praying or something religious, but I'm telling you, it's a tool that many counselors who are skilled at it, there are some that aren't too skilled at it, but those that are, I've met a lot of people who've been really helped by it. It's a way to help your brain, left and right hemispheres of your brain connect over something that's trapped in the emotional side of the brain. And I think it's just a wonderful tool. It seems to be incredibly helpful.
And recently, another one that has really been helpful with this last memory, the only way was visualization. So I had the memory, and my counselor is taking me back into that room with the people there. And then my adult person now was with that person holding hands of the one, the age at which I was, walking through that. And my adult person now, I am talking to the child, and also talking to my grandpa, talking to other things, telling him, I mean, he's yelling, pointing, shouting, doing whatever you feel you need to. But then I'm walking out, and so it's a visualization. I'm actually watching myself walk out of the room, walk out of the house, lock the door, go to the car, buckle up, because I was around 4 or 5 at this time, buckle up in a car seat.
And we were bucking kids in car seats back when we were kids.
No. getting in and in the car, driving away, and then at the other end of that, coming into our garage at our house, coming out and feeling safe and getting to a place of where that child is safe and calm. And whenever I was seeing that, dealing with that memory and seeing that, I would then visualize that what I have, that my counselor at that time was helping me walk through. My focus became more on me, what I was doing with the child and leaving and locking and moving away. If you ever, anybody has ever seen Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I think that's a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is where my grandpa, his presence and him, as I was re-seeing that time and time again, he was shrinking. It's like now he's like...
Sarah's fingers are about 3 inches apart at the moment.
So now he's like this little guy, same whole little guy, but it's on the chair, but it's his power is not there. the power. I mean, eventually, I hope it will go away.
The
I don't
size
know.
Of an ant, and then be gone.
But my presence is bigger, and his presence is smaller. So it's. I think you were said you were reading your work where you somebody was having nightmares, and then they you think about a different ending. And
yeah, if you have recurring like a night terror, then you actually lay down during the daytime, and you relive the night terror in your memory, and then write a different ending. Make it end differently. Make it end in a way that's very helpful. And they say, well, actually, then infiltrate your dreams and time. It's not necessarily that easy, but it's a tool.
And there was another incident, the memory that I remember. We were just, we were reading a book, and then this whole other thing that I had never, ever shared with anybody with some, not, it was, I was 16 and totally different thing, but same thing, a visualization of where I'm now with that person and visualizing. And then when I'm in that moment, I'm visualizing now, and it diminishes.
Because that's actually what's going on in your heart and brain and spirit. God is at work to bring you to the forefront and to diminish these influences that hurt you and affected your life. And I think that's why it's not just visualization. I know some people are going to hear that like, oh, we just imagine our way to wholeness. No, the visualization works because that's actually what's happening in Sarah. She's becoming greater, and the negative influences in her life are becoming lesser until they, again, like to be able to, this whole memory 2 months ago began with the force of my grandpa being so strong that it affected not just me, but everybody around him, to now, you're talking about him as a little 3-inch critter that you just shrunk, and the power is gone. And that's why it has meaning. It doesn't have meaning because I'm just going to pretend I can get there. It's actually seeing what God and his spirit is. And interestingly enough, we talk about it this way. Your counselor is not, quote unquote, a Christian counselor.
No.
In fact, she's a little bit thinking Christianity has abused people more than it's helped them.
I mean, she knows a lot of different, religions. And so, yeah.
But God is using her. God's putting his wisdom for you in her, even if she doesn't know it or acknowledge it or whatever. And I think, because when we come back and we talk about things that happened for you in trauma stuff, and I just go, that's powerful. That's really things I've been praying about and seeing God do already. So, the first counselor you had was a Christian counselor. That didn't sort out so well. And not saying only go to unchristian counselors, but saying make sure you find a good one. Well, this has been such a tremendous story, Sarah, and it keeps unfolding. And I know people always, I get tons of email about people really appreciating you coming back. There are people really rooting for you and your wholeness. And we are rooting for a lot of people we know that also have trauma in their heart. Some maybe don't, like you, don't know the cause of it yet, just see the effects in their life. And Kyle and I talk about this all the time. It's easy to kind of feel like there's something really dark right there, but I'm not going to look at it. You'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
But I see it's been there my whole life. I didn't know it, and it's affecting me.
Other people know it, though, and walk around it. Just kind of. But maybe it's because you don't have some of these tools. If you had these tools, you'd be able to go into that darkness and find God in there, sorting things out for you like they're doing for Sarah. And that's our prayer, and that's our hope. That's why we share some of this stuff, because there's a lot of trauma in the world. There just is. And the Sin is Trauma talk that Kyle and I've done, all this stuff comes to bear on the fact that if you haven't had big T trauma like Sarah, like me, I haven't, but I've had small T in terms of what sin and then how religion exacerbated the fear and shame of sin to keep us from knowing God and knowing his fullness.
Yeah.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.